Well, it's 10.
Everybody.
On time is late.
People that have to read all. It's not one of us to read
the cards.
Yeah. It's not a problem.
Point a finger. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, they're all grown people. They're not here on
cards. Right?
Kids are here. Good morning and welcome to the 49th annual San Fernando Valley AA Convention with Al-Anon and Alateen participation. My name is Josh and I'm a real alcoholic. Today is the best day of my life.
You keep saying that every day.
Amen. In addition to our full 24-hour schedule of marathon meetings, there are many events taking place this weekend that you will want to know about. Highlights include meditation meetings both today and tomorrow. Directly following this meeting, here in the Hidden Hills Room, we have the Young People's Meeting starting at 12 noon. Our Newcomers Meeting starts at 1:30 upstairs in the Ventura Room, and in the Grand Ballroom at 2 p.m., come join us for the Long Timers Meeting. Plus, there's late night fun at the midnight movie showing of My Name is Bill W., playing tonight at midnight in the Beverly Hills Room. I hope you're taking notes of all these rooms. Please see the complete schedule of all meetings, workshops, and events by picking up your copy of the 2025 program at the registration desk in the Grand Ballroom. Parking validations are available in the Grand Ballroom foyer for $12, and after midnight they are available at the hospitality suite. There are no in-and-out privileges. The Marriott is a non-smoking facility, and that includes no vaping. There are only two designated smoking areas. They are located at the side entrance outside the Grand Ballroom and the pool area behind the atrium past the front desk of the hotel lobby. Please use the ashtrays and observe the Marriott's smoking policies. Recordings of our main speakers for this weekend and speakers from the past conventions will be available in the Grand Ballroom foyer. Commemorative convention merch is available in the foyer across from the entrance to the Grand Ballroom. Get your t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and other fun merch before they sell out. And be sure to get your raffle tickets for a chance to win up to $6,250. Only 2,500 tickets will be available. So please be sure to get yours before they sell out. You can purchase tickets at the raffle desk located in the foyer of the Grand Ballroom. And finally, do not take photographs in the ballroom or at the convention that may capture people in the background, so those who may want to maintain their anonymity. Thank you for letting me be of service. Take it away, Joni.
Thank you so much.
Gee, many crickets. Good morning. My name is Joni, and I am an alcoholic. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want to be the hand of AA, always be there, and for that, I am responsible. Can you guys even see me?
I have not seen you at all.
This happens to me a lot. I have to remind you, I am standing. I would like to welcome you all to the 49th Annual San Fernando Valley Alcoholics Anonymous Convention and the Hospitals and Institutions Meeting. The San Fernando H&I Committee takes AA meetings and AA literature into facilities where people are unable to get to outside meetings. There may be some who are not familiar with the 11th tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. I have asked, she's not here, so it didn't matter who I asked. Sam, you want to read, the statement of anonymity? Okay. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sandy, and I'm definitely an alcoholic.
Thank you. Where is it? It's in there somewhere. You put it together. Give us 1 second. Really? We just looked at it, didn't we? Just like, no, that's this. I don't see it. Give me 1 second. Basically what it says.
Okay, got
I'm
it.
Not going to tell anybody. Okay.
Just sit down, controller. We seek our continued support by presenting AA members, A, only by the first name, and B, by using no reconcilable pictures. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our fellowship and assures our members that their recovery will be private. Often the active alcoholic will avoid any source of help which might reveal his or her identity. Alcoholics Anonymous is not affiliated with any other organizations, although many have adapted the AA 12 steps for their own use. A is self-supporting, declining any outside contributions, and we are non-professionals offering only the voluntary support of alcoholics helping another. Throughout the world, favorable media coverage has been principal means of bringing alcoholics into our fellowship. You have helped make this possible, and for that, we do thank you.
Okay. I have asked Denise to read the H&I Statement of Purpose.
Statement of Purpose. Denise, alcoholic. Purpose. The sole purpose of the San Fernando Valley Hospital and Institutional Committee, henceforth referred to as the Committee, is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to persons confined to any facility, governmental or private, where there are alcoholics. AA panels of this committee are to be conducted on invitation by each facility. The committee is organized under the ninth tradition of AA. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. The committee operates under the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous in all of its affairs, ever mindful of the admonition, cooperation, not affiliation. The committee is not a thing apart for AA, but rather it is an addition to AA's existing services. The committee guarantees continuity of the AA panels. No one individual can make this possible. Only the continuity of a committee image can. Members come and go, but the committee continues.
Good job. Thank you so much. Read the introduction. Okay. I have identified myself as an alcoholic. May I see the hands of any other alcoholics present? Okay, we're all here. Sure. Me? Yeah. Just sometimes. Welcome, we're all here. Okay, I have asked Sandy again to read a portion of Chapter 3.
I'm Sandy, and I'm still an alcoholic as of 5 minutes ago.
What am I reading?
I gotta get these folders going on. More about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily or mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts that we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had fully conceived to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control their drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs, they never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which makes alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree that there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it has not done so yet.
Thank you so much. And I have asked, it says Millie Y, but it's really Millie N. That is my bad. I've asked her to read a portion of Chapter 5.
Millie Alcoholic.
Millie.
Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us had tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapters to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
I have asked Suzanne to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Suzanne Alcoholics.
Suzanne.
12 traditions. Number 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those we serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. At this time, I would like to introduce our speaker for today, my friend Tim. He's from Hollywood, California. I've known Tim a long time. Tim's known Tim a long time. And I thought, yeah, actually, he has a pretty good story. So it is my honor to introduce to you my friend Tim.
It's a pretty high bar. My name's Tim. I'm an alcoholic. This was a great idea until just about 2 seconds ago. So, let me first off tell you what I don't want you to know. What I don't want you to know is that I'm narrow-minded, opinionated, selfish, and self-centered. And that's me. So anything I do that is not that, for me, is contrary action. And that's this. Now, I enjoy the hell out of this because I get to talk about two of my favorite things. Me and Alcoholics Anonymous. Wasn't always the case. I didn't always feel that way. My road to this podium has been really windy. You know, I didn't go to a meeting, get sober, and stay in AA. That's not how my story goes. My story goes in and out, roundabout, and ending up here. So I have 12 days and 1 month and 36 years. My sobriety date is 12/13/88. And I say it like that because what everybody always hears is the 36 years, but you know what I got today? I woke up this morning and I didn't drink. I don't want to drink right now. I've had opportunities, obviously numerous, to drink. I got money in my pocket, right? But what I have gained from being here is a sense of life and self-respect that I don't want to lose. I mean, cars come and go, houses come and go. I've been really fortunate. My wife has not gone. Not despite any of my efforts, right? So all of that stuff can go. But the one thing I can still hold on to is my self-respect. I can hold on to me. And I like the way she said that. She may have been being joking or facetious, but it's true. By doing these steps and applying the principles of the traditions, I've learned about me. I know some stuff. I have to be careful with that word, those two words, I know. Because when I get stuck in I know, then that puts me here, right? And I can't be there because then I start running stuff and it goes bad. So it all started for me in Hollywood. I was raised in Hollywood. First off, is there anybody in this group right here in this setting, is there anybody here who is not now or has in the past worked in H&I? Everybody? No, just a nod will do, yeah? Okay. Because I like to know who I'm talking to, right? Because if everybody would have raised their hands, cool, I'd be preaching to the choir. You already know the benefits of H&I. Okay, and I'm going to try to get to the benefits of how they worked in my life. Because I was raised, my world was from Hollywood and Western, south to Melrose, east to Union, to about 6th or Olympic, north to about Temple, and then Sunset all the way back. That's a rather large rectangle, but it's all ghetto. There's nothing really good in any of that area, right? And if you go down there, you don't want to go down there late, even today, even with gentrification and all of that. So that's where I came about. That's where I came up from San Diego when I was just a little boy, and that's where I went to school. That's where I didn't go to school. That's where I ran away. I used to run away to Echo Park and hang out with the fellas. You know what I mean? I was more comfortable. My home life was not ideal. You know, my parents were Depression era kids, so they had rough come ups, man. They you know, I through work on myself, I've been able to realize what they had to go through to get here, to do what they did, and raise six kids. Right? They raised six kids, and you know what? Everybody else in my family did really well. Everybody in my family has a college education. Everywhere, one of my family is, you know, successful. And then there's me, right? I didn't go to college until I was 55 years old. I was old, right? I stopped going to school in the seventh grade. And I started getting arrested, like, almost immediately. One of the first things we did was I went to the Salvation Army and I bought a trench coat. And then I sewed pockets on the inside big enough to accommodate a skateboard. And we'd go to any store and steal skateboards and stuff. And I would fill it with lunch meat and alcohol. Now, the best alcohol at that period of time was hard liquor. And it didn't matter what it was. If it was schnapps, which is awful. I don't know why they make it, but it's always the last thing left in the locker. You know what I mean? So, and I would fill that up and we'd go to the park and we would eat and drink and break bones on our skateboards. And that's how I kind of grew up. And then it escalated to doing more crimes. I mean, I don't know how it works where a 10-year-old kid can walk into an antique store with a couple of alabaster lamps and say, "Hey, how much can I get for these and get $10? Yeah, I mean, this was 100 years ago, but, you know. So I don't understand what adult would do that without knowing exactly what they were doing. So, I mean, that's one of the things that just baffles me. But that's what I would do. I would break into garages and I would steal people's stuff. And then we started breaking into houses and stealing stuff. Because it was easier than working. Because I wound up at about 14. I met up with a Vietnam vet. And if you're a vet here, I'm glad you guys made it back alive. Welcome. Come on in. Have a seat. We don't have any coffee. We already drank the coffee. You got to get here early for that stuff. He taught me how to trim trees. So we started cutting down trees back in the valley back in the day. They had windbreaks out here, right? And there were long rows of eucalyptus trees that were like on the property lines, and they were windbreaks. Well, as developers came in, they had to get rid of those. And so we would come out and we would cut those down and do all. It was a steady business, and that's what we did. And started drinking Budweiser and Frost Tops for breakfast. That was it. That was my steady diet at 14. That was it. So I did that until I couldn't do it anymore because we had a station wagon and a couple of pickup trucks, and him and his brother just took them and left. Went back to Massachusetts. Left me high and dry. So then, well, the only thing I knew how to do is I knew how to climb, and I knew how to break and enter. Hey, perfect. That bathroom window on the second story is open. I was in. So that set me up to start getting arrested for stuff. I started stealing cars. I started going to jail. And my criminal has... I have to be careful on my criminal... Can't even say it. That's why I got to be careful with it. My criminal history, because I was lucky, one of the luckiest criminals I've ever known. My water, please. My first GTA, I stole it from the valley, drove it over to Van Ness and Beverly, and we were getting ready to take it to a shop, and they did a felony stop on us. And it was stolen by no uncertain terms. I didn't have any keys. I had learned how to pick locks, so the dash was perfect, but it was just running. 67 Mustang in pristine condition. We were going to replace my buddy's front end because we totaled that one. Anyway, they felony stopped. They got us. They had us going downtown. They put us in Parker Center, and for some reason, they had us going up the elevator, and they left us alone, the three of us, me and my two road dogs. And we, my one partner was straight out of the YA, state raced. If he'd have picked this up, they'd have hit him with what was known as a habitual criminal act, the bitch they used to call it, because that would have, he would have been done. The next, my other buddy was an up and coming locksmith. Thank you very much. He helped me out very bad, right? So if he would have taken the rap, then it would have given him a felony. He couldn't have gotten bonded and would have screwed him for that. And then there was me. He was like, all right, I'll take the rap. I stole it. I'll own it, right? And so I go to court. I tell him I found it. Hey, how did I come across this property? This is not mine. I found it. Okay. It turns out, by no work on my part, the owner of the car never showed up, never did anything, and they wound up dropping it to driving without the owner's consent and sent me home. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, who has that happen to them? Consistently. That was my first real crime. My last real crime was I walked into Baller Hardware, I picked up a chop saw, a $350 saw, walked out the door with it. This was 40 years ago. Just walked out the door. So I got it down to a construction site. It had stickers all over it. It was a brand new unopened box. I went to a construction site and said, I need $100 for this. This is mine. I found it. The guy says, okay, well, that's fine. I think I got $50. I go, sold. He goes, but I don't have it all. I said, okay. So he gives me like $20, $30, tells me I'll pick up the rest in the morning. He said, be here at 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, something like that. No worries. Well, I had nowhere else to go and nothing else to do. So 6 o'clock the next morning, I'm banging on his door to get my money. Well, what happened, long story short, what happened was he didn't have the money and he had chained the door, and I pushed the door open so it was breaking and entry, forcible entry. He hit me, so I hit him back and used a phone cord to tie him to a chair. Now, anybody who's interested in committing crimes, if you tie somebody up, even in their own home, that's kidnapping, okay? So you got to be aware of that. So what happened was, not too much later, the police showed up. They showed up because what he had done is he had taken that saw, called the police, told them the story, said I was coming back, and that was the evidence, and they had me dead bang for commercial burglary. And at that time, there was a thing called petty with a prior, and I had a bunch of priors. And they were going, right? And so the cops who knew me, I mean, they used to take me to Parker Center and tell the detectives, hey, is this the guy you're looking for? And they would say, I don't know, turn them around. Because if I saw cops, I ran. I didn't care. I'm a good runner. I can run. Or I used to. I'm old now. Take me to jail. But so anyway, they had me. Dead bang. So by this time, it was like 7, 8. The hardware store was opening. They took me, the saw, everything down there. And in those days, I wasn't quite as hygienic as I am now. Right? It's a good way to put it, in that the cops had to have the windows rolled down all the way just so they could breathe, right? Worked for me. Because I heard them in the back of the car saying, there's no record of this saw ever existing. So my I found it story, wow, it's pretty bad when the person invites you, is the first one to leave. Thanks, Joni. So it's... At that point, I knew, okay, so I found it was going to work. However, on the assault, forced entry, all those other charges, that was all on top of it. And the cops were really happy. They were saying, you're done. You're looking at 3 to 5 no matter what. So, you know, figuring that's the case. So I go to court, cry to my parents, you know, no, this time they got me. I'm done. I'm going this time for real. And they never showed up. Nobody ever showed up. I don't understand how. I don't know how. Nobody showed up. It was a DA reject. I don't know why. I don't know how. That's why I say I'm about the luckiest criminal I've ever known. Right? So why am I doing H&I if I never went to prison? Right? I mean, one of the things about H&I is going to prison. Well, not really. In my opinion, H&I is why Alcoholics Anonymous exists. This is how we started. Remember? Towns Hospital? Bill W.? Hey, man, I want a drink. You got anybody that I can talk to? H&I, baby. Right there. The act of desperation. Right? He had to stay sober, and he knew where we were. Locked up. All right? And that's one of the things. Because like when I was going in and out of county jails, I would go to Men's Central, Twin Towers, Wayside, every one of Waysides, and H&I would come in. And I can't really tell you what they said. But what I can tell you is when I would go to those groups, because I would go to those groups because when I was in those groups, when I was in the H&I meetings in a facility, I felt safe. I don't know why. I was no safer there than I was on the yard or in the hallways anywhere else, but I felt safe. It gave me a sense of, okay, and what I heard was, what I remember of hearing is, you don't have to do this anymore. There's another way to live. I didn't think it was for me. I really didn't. I didn't think God was for me. I was raised with, out in the front yard, look up, kid, that's God. There's nothing. You came from nothing, you'll be nothing. There's nothing. That's how I was raised. So the God thing was tough because God was good for y'all. Y'all deserved a God and earned a God, and God loved you, but he just didn't have time for me. Just didn't work for me. And I had a hard time with that. But when I was in H&I panel meetings in a facility, for some reason I felt safe. And I remember that feeling. So there I was. I'd gotten out. Had nothing else to do. My mom had met that demon spawn, what is it, Al-Anon. See, all the drunks laughed and all the Al-Anon say, hey, asshole. You know what I mean? But look, what happened was, Al-Anon saved my mom's life. And by extension, saved my life. And I have a debt, right, of my life for that, because she learned those two words, tough love. She told me, no, kid, you're going to kill yourself, but you're not going to kill yourself in my house. How tough is that? Well, it was tough, right? And I'm the second to the youngest of six, and I was persona non grata in my house from the time I was about three, because that's about the time I can remember. When I was a kid, I had dark hair. But all my brothers and my sister had blonde hair. Mm-hmm. Kids are vicious, man. If they see a difference that they can exploit, forget about it. Well, it was exploited. So I didn't feel welcome, which is why I went to the streets. Because in the streets, it didn't matter, right? Because I was a skinny kid that could fit through a doggy door, the older kids loved me, right? So So there I am. I had just dodged the bullet one more time on a serious offense. And what else could I do? My mom had told me I could sleep on her couch under one condition. And this time I knew she meant it, because she had told me no. She had told me that I couldn't even come home and shower or eat. And this is my mom. She was my one saving grace. You know, she would always coddle me and tell me that, you know what? Don't listen to your brothers. Don't listen to all those people. You are my son. You're all, you know, all that stuff. All that, you know, what? Didn't everybody's mom have to tell them that I was actually their father's son? No. That's how I grew up. It was a question mark. And But I know better now. Yeah, right? It's fucked up. Anyway, sorry. So I got out. There I am. She says I can sleep on if I call this rehab and go in one more time. I've been through many rehabs, many, many, many. And my problem is I hazard to say it, I'm smart. In other words, I can read and write. So what I would do is I would go to a rehab long enough to be able to hold breakfast down, and then I would read the book. And I said, oh, I know what that means. I don't need you guys to tell me what I can read in this book, and I'm out. And I would wonder why a week later there I was, right? Because I can read and write, and I can comprehend, and I know what they mean. However, taking the action was a whole nother story. So anyway, this last time, it was, I got a lot of time.
Not really.
What?
You changed.
I got two. Oh, yeah. Plenty of time. So anyway, like I say, when I was born, right? So what happened was, it was my brother's birthday. They were all going out to dinner. I was going to stay home and spend quality time with the dog because, you know, somebody had to. And 2 o'clock that afternoon, the phone rang. And they were all dolled up, ready to go. Big deal. A quick aside, my brother was an L.A. County sheriff. Made Christmas, Thanksgiving a little awkward, a little bit. But, you know, something about nodding out and throwing up at the table was not really the way to go to Christmas. Like, yeah, it worked for me. Anyway, so as they were walking out the door, the phone rang. And it was this rehab. And they said, we have a bed for you. Now, it had been a couple weeks, a month. So I was feeling healthy. I was, you know, drinking a few beers every now and then, but I had her under control. Everything's good. I got this. Mom, look, see, I can put it down anytime I want. Yeah. And she said, no, forget about it. The deal was, because she had learned boundaries one more time through Al-Anon, right? And that her heart, I'm sure, because my heart does it, tells me to behave one way. And that's not always within my boundaries. Like, I may extend myself too far for someone in order to help them, and that's not really helping them, right? What I've learned is sometimes help is control, right? And just all this stuff. And so she had to make that tough decision, tell the rest of my family no, and to tell me yes. The rest of my family said no. They wanted to go, but no, she wouldn't do it. So there I went. And for some reason, that time it stuck. I walked in, and one of the guys I drank with was there. His girlfriend was at the front desk doing intakes. And I was like, son of a gun, what are you doing there? She was like, what are you doing here? And then he came over that night, because they were boyfriend, girlfriend. So he came over. Anyway, so we met, and we met again for the first time. And I've known him ever since. And that gave me hope. Right? Because if that person can do it, then maybe I can do it. Because I never did anything in my life that was of any merit. So then, this is where H&I started to kick in for me. So we started going to meetings. I was in the house, and he would take me out. We'd go, and then my sponsor at the time was a old biker and this and that. But it got me into going on panels. And I would go on panels, and a lot of times I wouldn't be able to talk because I didn't have enough time. But then once I had my 6 months and I could talk on a panel, well, look at me, I would just wouldn't shut up. 45 minutes and not say anything. Watch. So what happened was I started to see people that were just like me. People that didn't think they had a chance. And where else do you go but hospitals and institutions to find them? Because if I'd have had one more run, I'd have done one more run. I was done, right? And when I saw these folks, and I remember being in jail and sitting there and thinking, I don't know how to get out of this. Even though it was an H&I panel telling me exactly how to get out of it, I was just lost. And so what I try to do is say, it doesn't matter if you've been to prison or been to jail. What matters is if you've gotten sober. And one of the reasons why I think that AA as a whole works is because of two words: incomprehensible demoralization. Now, when I say those two words, I'm sure that most of the people in this room say, yeah, I know what that is. And that's the language that we speak, because it says in the words that you cannot understand this. It's incomprehensible. Yet in this room, everybody understands it. And that's why it works, because outside of the room, it's incomprehensible. They can't get it, but we know. And if after I had gotten that, then I knew what this was. And I knew that the one thing that I did have was I had an understanding of what incomprehensible demoralization was. And where do you go to find folks that need some hope? I mean, they're all over, especially today. You can walk out the street. But in a hospital or an institution, it's different, right? It's like we don't have a choice. We're there against, well, in jails, we're there against our will. So when I'm locked up and I'm there against my will, that little ray of hope is enough to hold on to. And the idea that I can come from zero education, zero. My last report card that I remember in school was 100%. 100% F's. Every column. Every one of them. I was like, look, Dad, 100%. Right? 100% failure. And that's where I come from. Now, you see me dressed like this, and you can draw any conclusion you like. I dress like this because we dress like this to go to funerals. That's how you dress at a funeral, right? You dress nice and respectful. Well, what about for the living? Why can't I show that same respect and consideration for the living? This is worth it. This saved my life. And how do I show that respect? Well, I can dress the part. All right, I can dress the part, and I can come in here and I can work on my language, because my language is straight out of the gutter. I can't believe I haven't said so many words that, you know, just for expression. They're in my vocabulary. But I don't need to do that express to you guys. The hope that I got from getting sober by contrary action, one more time. So what am I looking at here then? You screwed me up.
2 minutes.
Oh, I got 20 minutes.
You got 15, Bucko.
Oh, okay. So what happened was I started going to, my first panel was at Tarzana. And I would go to Tarzana Detox. And that's a rough crowd. I got to tell you, that is a rough crowd. Because they're incoherent. So all I'm doing, I'm talking to people that are asleep. Now that's spiritual right there. And then I started going to the residential side. And then I started seeing the reactions. And I can identify with those reactions, because when I was in that rehab, so now rehabs, back in those days, it was a 6 to 9 month program, right? Today they're like 28 days, a couple of 2 day follow ups, whatever the hell it is. Actually, I work in recovery, it's more than that. But anyway, that's a better line. Why let the truth get in the way of a good story? Well, I said that from the podium. No. Well, it would have been a better story, okay? Figure that one out right there. So when I was in that facility, they would come in. And then I started to identify. And that's how I meant when I said that's when it started for me, because then I started to hear. I started to listen to what they were saying from the podium about where they'd been and what they did to not go back. And for me, that's what it was about. I just didn't want to go back. I didn't want to stop drinking, really. I was okay with it. If I could just have a couple of beers, maybe a few shots, you know, a barbecue, football game, I would have been okay. It's not the caboose that kills you, right? Something like that. So what I learned was I just have to change everything. Right? I had to develop some morals and principles, because when I got here, I was with that, the code of the street, you know, all that BS, and I had to apply some real principles. I had to get some values, some real values. I got married at 3-4 years, been married for 32, right? I did something right. Huh? I was able to raise my kids. We put our kids through college. Our kids have never seen us, like, break furniture. They've never seen us, yeah, no cop cars at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? My kids had a great upbringing. They don't know anything about this. They've never heard my story. They've never heard anything that I've ever done. I don't think it's any of their business. They didn't need to know that, because one of the things that I believed when I got here was that if I tell my kids, oh yeah, I did this, this, and this, what I'm telling them is this is what you do. Because my kids look at what I do, not what I say. Didn't do anything I say, bastards. But, oh, sound covers in here. Doesn't it travel? Microphone hell. So, we were able to raise them. And they all have good lives now. We've put them through college. They're all nurses. They're living the life that I never had because of this program, because of applying some values and some principles and morals to our lives. You know, getting here. It. How do I put this without offending anybody? Because you know what? I used to come to the podium and I didn't care if I offended you. I really didn't. I was. But that's not my objective today. My objective today is carry a message of hope and recovery. And I can't carry a message of hope and recovery and offend you at the same time. So I have to choose my words. Because I don't want anybody to walk out of here thinking, that's not for me. I mean, I may not make you think, oh, hell, where do I sign up for this HNI? Talk to Lance. So, right? Front Street. I was in and out of AA and into that NA. I was in and out of AA and NA, and then I was into NA, and then I was into AA, and now I'm back in AA, right? Like knee-deep in it. Because I have some opinions, and I don't know if this is the right forum, but I'm telling you my opinion is, if you went to a library and there is one book, would you go back? No. Information is power, and what I need to know is what's going to serve me today. I need to understand that. Today, this Alcoholics Anonymous, the group, the Pacific group has helped me learn some structure. I've been doing that for a few years now, and I can appreciate that. When I got here, I could not. When I got here, go back to that guy that wanted to offend, I was offensive. I wasn't housebroken yet. Put it that way. And by coming around here and practicing these things and making mistakes and mistakes and mistakes and doing things wrong, I learned how to do things right. Because the only person that's not going to make a mistake is the person that's not doing anything. If you're doing something continuously, eventually you're going to make a mistake. And I expect that now. What happened for me was I don't make the same mistakes. I don't do the same thing over, making the same mistake, wondering, damn, maybe this time it'll work. No, you know what? I'll give it like maybe a dozen times before I figure out that maybe it won't work because I'm hard-headed. But the principles that are set forth is a guide for life. I had none when I got here. And by getting involved in H&I and going to panels and then finally being able to go back to Men's Central and back to those jails, back to Wayside, I got to tell you, if you're not cleared to go through jails, whether you want to do H&I or you're just here because it's a virtually empty room, whatever the reason, get cleared. Go to the jails. Do a panel at Men's Central Jail, right? Because when you say, hey, deputy, can you open that door? I'm leaving. They say, by all means, sir. And they let you walk out. And that's worth the price of admission right there. Just being able to say, yeah, rack the gate, buddy, I'm out. And they let you, all right? I can't tell you how many times I was, you know, thinking about laying in my rack thinking, man, I wish I had those few seconds back. If I would have made a left instead of a right, I wouldn't have got. If I could just rewind that clock just a little bit, man, my life would be so different. Well, what I've learned here is that this is the rewind button. I can tell you right here, right now, this is the best result we can hope for drinking. This is it. This is as good as it gets. It gets a whole lot better. But this is the best we can hope for. It only goes down from here. If I choose to drink, my life gets worse, no matter what. Now, I'm not one of those people that thinks that if I drink, I'm going to die. I don't think that. I know I can drink and not die. If I have two beers, I'm not going to die. But when I have that six-pack and a few shots, I might. But what I do know, which is a universal truth for me, and I'm thinking that everybody else in this room, is if I use or I drink, my life will get worse. Why would I want to make my life worse? When if I stay and I practice these principles and I apply this to my life gets better. Now, I still get to deal with life on life terms, but I get to deal with it clearly, right? And with help. Where am I? Okay. So, for my money, H&I is the best place to go. Because it's a structured environment. I get to say what I have to say. I get to carry the message. And I get to be grateful all at the same time. Right? There's such, I'm kind of lost for words, but there's, hard to believe, there's such a sense of gratitude, I guess, when leaving a facility, the clients or inmates or whoever are saying, "Wow, man, I really liked what you had to say." Right? That's because when I was in there, I didn't like anything. Right? When I was in there, I didn't like anything except for sleeping. If I could have just slept for a little time, that would have been great. But I didn't like any of it. So to be able to offer anybody a little bit of hope, and everybody in this room, because we're breathing in and out, I got to figure most of us are somewhat sober. There's hope right there. And if I can offer that hope to somebody that has none, that could be the difference between life and death. Because if I choose to get out and go drink, then I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. I don't need a crystal ball to tell you exactly what's going to happen. That was the moment. I had to mention the crystal ball. And they're like, "All right, I'm out of this. So much for that. All right, have at it." Okay, now I can tell you the real story. This is the good shit. All right? So if I can do that, if I have just any input, like, so what I do now is I sponsor guys, and I have a sponsor. I've had a sponsor for a long time, and you know, when the guys that I sponsor call me and tell me what's going on with them, and sometimes it's just a matter of saying, "Yeah, that's tough. That's, you're really going through a hard time." You know, sometimes it's just the acknowledgement that I'm hearing them, and it's hard to do that. Yeah, parenting is tough. Relationships are tough. You know, and they're not tough because we're drunks. They're tough. Marriage family therapists make a good living. It's not all on us. Probably a good part of it, but not all of it. Because it's just a human condition. Relationships are tough. And so when they call me up with these issues, then, yeah, man, I've been married for a while. Fortunately, I married a perfect angel. She happens to be in the audience. She does nothing wrong. Boy, I am such a screw up. Huh. You're getting some tonight. No. So look, you know, like I said, I can talk for 45 minutes and not say anything. And I feel like that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to fill the bill, right? And that's not what I want to do. What I want to do is I want to let you know that this has been contrary action. It's not my idea to come up here and try to spread a message of hope and recovery. Left to my own devices, I'd still be in bed, right? But that's not what it's about for me today. Today it's about taking the extra step. Thank you so much for asking me, the committee, for letting me come up. I mean, of all the people, there are so many people out that are much more involved, have done more time, have, you know, just all that, and they pick me. That's an honor and a privilege, right? And to represent hospitals and institution, that's a tough call for me because I can't give it enough. I can't tell you enough how how impactful it is and has been on my life. What I can tell you is if you try it, you might learn it. Maybe. But my words don't mean nothing to you. You're going to walk out of here and by lunchtime you'll forget most of about this, if anything. Maybe you had a black tie instead of a blue tie because I grabbed the wrong tie. I know that's what you guys are all working on. So look, what I want to leave you with is if you haven't done H&I, do H&I. Just try it for a year and see if it's not as rewarding as I'm telling you. Because for me, I'm guaranteeing it is. To be able to see people when they hear it. Even if you're talking to a room with this many people in a facility and one person says, that's right. One person. That's all it takes. One person to say, I heard you. I get it. Can I get your number? Right? And then instead of when you get out going to the connection or whatever it is you plan on doing, go to a meeting. I'll meet you at a meeting. And doing that. And seeing that change. When I see the change in others, it helps me to see the change in me. And H&I is one of the best places I have found to get that done. So I know I have a few minutes left on the clock, but you know what? When you're done, right? So thank you very much for not throwing anything.
Is this yours?
That would be mine.
That would be yours. Thank you so, so much. Just real quickly, and I know everybody wants to get out and do whatever it is that you do when you get out, but so I just have to tell you why H&I is my heart. You know, I'm a nice Jewish girl from Beverly Hills that took the wrong turn, and so when I went to prison, there was only two ways to get out of your cell, and either you could go to church or you could go to an AA meeting or an H&I meeting. So I became a Jew for Jesus. And one day they came to my cell and they said, there's a H&I person here, and if you want to go, knock yourself out. Well, I couldn't pick that lady out in a crowd of two today, you know? But I'll tell you what she said. She said that 12 years prior to that moment, she was wearing the same clothes I was, which was prison blues. And she had this thing around her neck that I usually wear. It's a lanyard with keys on it, eh? And she said one of the keys went to her front door, and that perked me up. And she said one of the keys went to her office, and I started to sit straight in my seat. And she said one of those keys went to her car, and I went, bitch, you got a car? Okay? And when she had this badge on that said she could leave, I had a bracelet on that said I couldn't. And I said to myself, man, I'm going to get what that bitch has, I swear to God. Okay? And when I paroled, the first thing I did was I went to an H&I meeting. And I've been going now for 16 and a half years. And it's the one meeting, no matter what, I do not miss. Thanks, guys, my team, that I love you all so very, very much. H&I means more to me than sometimes food, I got to tell you. And food means a shit ton to me. So thank you so much for attending this meeting. It means so much to me. Thank you, Tim, for doing what you did. Thank you, all of you, for being derelicts and getting here. This is just as good as it gets as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Now, here's the bad news. The person I asked to do the Lord's Prayer, how odd, didn't make it. Amy, are you... No, she's not here? Okay, who wants to... Lalo, you're looking good. Can I get you to, can I get you to read the Lord's Prayer? Or, I don't know, you memorized it? What a guy.
Are we reading a vision for you?
Well, I'm not. We aren't. You are.
That's different than the Lord's Prayer.
These people are really anxious to get out of here.
My name is Lalo. I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you shall surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. After a moment of silent meditation for the alcoholic who still suffers, please join me in the Lord's Prayer.
Thank you.